when we teach them that we can give you a window and a cathedral of glass that insulates as well as a wall, they want it. We need to be a pragmatic innovator who has the bleeding edge products that have been perfected and engineered to a high degree of replicability.
You don't brag about that to your investors, do you?
No, I do. No, it's great. I mean, if you're growing that fast and your market penetration is still that low, it's because the market is huge. Not to get too mushy about it, but like, we have a commitment to our communities here, right? And so it is a huge piece of who Alpen is that we're trying to build this thing here.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's great entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs who have something special going, something that drives my curiosity. I'm Dave Tabor, host of ProCo 360. I'm a former tech entrepreneur, and I love having these conversations and sharing them with you. Today's guest is Andrew Zeck, CEO of Alpen High Performance Products. This is a manufacturer of very high-tech, very cool windows. We're going to talk a lot about that. Before this conversation, Andrew took me for a tour of Alpen. R&D, well, we didn't talk a lot about R&D, but maybe we will.
We sure can.
We will. We're going to talk about that. Yep. But I did see the operation, which is super cool. And I made the mistake of actually putting my hand on... Well, it was dumb. Anyway, I did not get hurt, and so we're fine. Anyway, it's great to know that Alpen's based right here in Colorado. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about glass, about manufacturing, and about Andrew's move from finance to an operating CEO. So, Andrew, welcome to ProCo 360.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Man, I am glad I didn't actually rub my finger along the top of that edge. That would have been... really dumb.
I had a little shiver down my spine. I would have gotten a talking to from our safety committee had that happened.
Like, I know so much better than to do that. Anyway.
It's like a razor blade. Best not to run your hands down the edge of it.
Yeah, so yeah. having escaped that, tell us a quick overview of Alpen, and then we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's great. And first of all, thanks for having me. It's exciting to share the story. And the team here is just doing such wonderful things. And it's always nice to share that news with others. So Alpen is the manufacturer of the highest performance windows on planet Earth, right here in Louisville, Colorado.
That's a huge statement.
It is a huge statement. I know. And it's if we didn't have all the third-party data to back it up, I wouldn't be able to make it. I'd have lawyers being like, one of the highest performance. No, we are the manufacturer of the highest performance windows in the world.
That's cool. And you started out by being on the board. So what drew you to Alpen to begin with?
Yeah, so I have a passion for decarbonizing buildings. So if you look at all of the sources of carbon in our world, buildings are a huge percentage of the total. It's right up there, rivaling shipping or automotive or, you know, these things. And it's because there are so many buildings, right?
Yeah,
and then one of the things that makes buildings an area of passion for me is that once you build a building, it's around for a very long time, right? So you better do it right the first time. You know, everybody talks about these decarbonization goals by 2050, et cetera, et cetera. And a scary stat is that 80% of the buildings that will exist in 2050 when we want to have this carbon-free economy already exist today.
And they're not going to help us get there.
No, they're not going to help us get there, or many of them are not. And so we better be doing something about the buildings we already have, and we better be making the new buildings that our society needs up to standards that we're going to be proud of in 2050.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get into the whole business of building windows and such first. But first, I mean, you moved from the board. I want to start with this because you moved from the board to become CEO.
Yes. Like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. I mean, what made you decide?
The board seat was a lot easier.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. I could just lob softballs over the fence. Here, I actually need to drive some results. Before I joined the board of Alpen, I had helped to start a company that was focused on the financing of more efficient buildings. And it was a wonderful ride. I had great co-founders. We had a great team. We built this wonderful business. We sold it. I was there for 3 years after the sale, but I kind of got the itch. And you know, there was a piece of me that thought, okay, maybe I'm built for this board business. But no, I'm built for being in the trenches. Huh. And my wife would tell you that as much as I may gripe about the daily travails of whatever adventure I'm in the middle of, I would not be happy if I were not in the middle of it. So
it's, yeah. It's, I mean, you probably now have board members lobbing stuff over to you.
I do. In fact, and you say,
so do you feel differently about being the receiver than the lobber?
No, you know, I like building things, and I like building things that I'm proud of. And I think we're building something here that we can be really proud of. And if you don't have to put in the blood, sweat, and tears, I'm pretty sure the pride at the other end of it's not going to be the same, right?
Yeah. You know, I think back when I had a company, and now I think now as I'm older and more experienced and all that, I wish I had done so many things differently, you know, being a more mature person. I mean, look, you must, but now, you know, you were on the board looking in, now mm-hmm. you're in. Like, do you do things the way you always wish you had?
No. No, I make a trillion mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
and you never have enough dollars to go around, and you can never do all the things you want as fast as you want. But, you know, I think we have done a good job of trying to distill all of the things that Alpen could be doing down into the core principles of what we should be doing now. And sort of what is our raison d'etre.
Yeah.
And I think we have a really, you know, kind of strong vision in front of the team and a good game plan to get there. So,
well, let's talk about where you're going.
Sure. Because
in fact, before we even do that,
let's talk
about the windows themselves, because
okay.
they're pretty interesting. Describe what makes the windows the most energy efficient in the world.
Yes.
And, you know, this whole thing about making different kind of windows.
Yeah. So if I had to brutally oversimplify windows, because there is so much material science that goes into this, I would categorize them as like three sets of parts, right? You've got your frame material that holds it all together. You're used to seeing those out of wood or aluminum or vinyl or something like that. There is the glass itself that you look right through, but is actually where a lot of the material science in the window exists. And then there is the hardware system that allows you to open and close it, hopefully smoothly, but also it prevents air from infiltrating that window and eroding all of the other good work that you're doing with your frame and your glass, right? So Alpen approaches all three of those categories pretty differently than most other window manufacturers. So on the frame itself, we make our windows out of a high-tech composite material or fiberglass. Those are the two materials that we use. So the high-tech composite is basically an advanced thermoplastic. It is very strong. It is very durable over time. It holds a finish really well, but it is also a great insulator. Same thing with fiberglass. Incredibly strong. We can build massive windows with narrow sight lines. It holds paint great, but it is an insulating material.
You know, when I think of these, what was the term you used that's basically plastic? What was the term?
A composite. Yeah.
We hear that term composite, you know, and it's plastic of sorts. And, you know, I hear about fiberglass.
But people hear plastic and they think like the Tupperware.
That's
you know,
right. Right. So, you know, when I think about these materials, yeah. I think about some of the windows I've seen on older homes that have taken a beating from the sun
yes.
and stuff. And that these things, you know, they look so great when you first make them, and then like, you know what happens.
Yeah. Gen 1 PVC or vinyl windows are what you kind of think of in a cheap beach house or something like that. Like they're yellowing, they're
warping, they're cracking,
they're kind of ugly. Look like somebody smoked cigarettes next to them for years on end, and they have that like patina is maybe the most charitable way to put it. That does not even resemble the materials that we use for our windows, right? So we're you know 5-6 generations of material science down the road from those Gen 1 vinyl windows, right?
So we
put, number one, they're made to withstand an absolute beating from the UV conditions that we experience here in Colorado.
You can do that? You can actually make them so they can withstand that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they actually, you put titanium dioxide in them, which is, we call it sunscreen for your windows.
Yeah,
it basically repels the UV light.
And that really does.
In a selective way.
Forgive me for being cynical, because I've seen so much bad stuff.
I totally get it. And then we play some tricks with ours. We actually co-extrude a fiberglass rod down the center of the composite material to give it more rigidity and strength. so that you don't feel like your window frame is a noodle. You want it to be super strong. Yep. So anyway, lots of material.
So that's the casing.
Yeah. You're going to give me the hand signal for you're going down a rabbit hole right now. But so that is the frame materials. So very different than the aluminum or the wood that you might be used to. The second component, the glass itself, we make in, kind of a world-changing way. We partnered with Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and the Department of Energy to develop what is called a thin triple glass unit. And basically, this takes your traditional double pane glass, but then we put a light of cell phone glass that is 0.5 millimeters thick.
Wow, that's thin.
It is functionally weightless, thicknessless, and it bends like plastic. You think that it's plastic, but it's actually glass. Ultra clear. And we put it in the center of the insulated glass unit. And what that does is it creates another cavity to disrupt air convection. And it gives another surface that you can put a low emissivity coating of silver atoms onto. And combined, that simple, dumb guy, no moving parts, no electrical circuitry, no AI algorithm innovation, it increases the thermal performance of the window by about 3 to 5 times
wow.
that of a dual pane unit.
Wow.
So pretty cool stuff.
Because dual pane at the time was supposed to be the answer.
Well, it was the answer for a time.
Our
expectations shifted. The price of energy shifted. What's possible shifted. And then the third component, the hardware. So we use a bunch of different hardware systems that allow for multi-point locking around the perimeter of the window system. And when combined with great gasketing, more similar to what you'd expect from a car door, you can kind of picture how snugly a car door closes. It just creates this tremendous air seal. We have some windows that when you measure it in a lab, the air infiltration is 0.0.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
But you do inject the windows once they're fully encased,
yes.
You inject them with gas.
We inject the glass with gas, so either argon or krypton, and that is another way of preventing outside temperature from becoming inside temperature.
Huh. Mm-hmm. And that stays in there for
30 years.
Wow.
And so with our windows, our top windows are certified by third parties to be an insulating value of R11. Compare that with your legacy window, which is R1,
or a dual single pane.
A single pane, right?
Yeah.
Or a double pane window is like R2 to maybe
wow.
R3.
Yeah.
Ours are R11.
Wow. And you can have a four pane.
We can have a four-pane
well.
Window. Yep, yep. And
why would you do that? I mean, it seems, I think of like...
At a certain point, is it a parlor trick?
Yeah. Yes, but then now selling like, what, 8-bladed razors or something?
I can't even fit it under between
my nose and my mouth. So, so at some point, what?
Well, and so traditionally, you never would make a quad-pane window. That sounds crazy, right? It's like a funhouse mirror or something like that, right? And but by using this cell phone thin glass on the center, you would never know it's a quad pane window because it's as thick and it's as heavy as a traditional dual pane window.
But it works.
It works great, right?
At some point, is 5 better than 4 or is 8 better than 7?
There is a point of diminishing returns. We do a ton of modeling on this, and 4 is actually probably about where the cost benefit starts petering out.
Yeah.
One of the things from my background in finance is I'm just an absolute nut for show me the ROI, right? Like we're not creating these if you build it, they will come field of dreams technology.
Yep.
We're really proud of building technology that can pay for itself and can the business case can stand on its own 2 feet.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, does it come down to ROI, whether it's for a homeowner or for a business? Is that what it's really coming down to?
Yes, but ROI is measured in different ways depending on your audience, right? So if I'm making my dream home, for me, ROI has very little to do with the energy savings, just to be brutally honest. And it has a whole lot more to do with, can I sit next to the window overlooking the mountain range with my cup of coffee on a 0-degree day in a bathrobe and be happy about it, right? That is my ROI. And if I'm a hotel owner, my ROI probably has more to do with the
energy costs,
but also can my occupant sleep at night because the sound attenuation from the freeway next door and the thermal comfort and the you know, cheap window HVAC, not turning on and off all night. Not that any of us have ever stayed in that hotel.
Are these sound insulating too?
Very sound insulating.
Really?
Does
the extra super skinny layer of glass insulate sound more?
It does. Yeah. So if you think about sound waves, light waves, temperature waves, right? We're dealing with wave behavior, and as it goes through asymmetrical substrates, some of it bends, some of it's reflected, right? And so similar principles occur, right?
So it does work. But okay, curiosity question.
Sure.
Which is, I don't know, it's unrelated to any of this, except when you put that super thin piece of glass in there, how come that doesn't flex? How come it doesn't, like, whether it's sound or temperature or whatever, how come it doesn't distort?
Yeah. So, and that was actually one of the big questions we had when we were approached by the national labs, like, are we going to create a funhouse mirror and this thing is going to flex and you're going to look at it and it's going to be the skinny you from one side and the fat you from the other side. Right.
I'd pay to have the skinny me.
Glaze this side in, please. No. And so we did a ton of testing around this and, you know, first of all, the glass is super clear. So even if there is like slight distortion, you're not going to see it, visual distortion. But then also, this is where the manufacturing precision really comes in. So I was showing you out at the machinery outside that we construct these using a thermoplastic spacer system that chemically bonds to the glass, and it creates an incredibly precise distance between the different lights of glass in your insulated glass unit. And that prevents you from having something that is angled, a light of thin glass that's angled inside the outer lights. So we don't face problems with that.
Cool. Now, since you just described super cool glass, super cool manufacturing process, I think it's important to know that this only costs like 20% more than a typical window.
People's minds are blown when they hear that. Yeah. And my investors probably think maybe you should be charging more money for this. But no, I mean, listen, we think, first of all, it's core to our mission that we want this to not just be a niche product. We want this to be something that takes the market by storm, right? And so we are purposely pricing this in a way where, number one, we can be a surviving, thriving business entity, but also where it is exponential performance gains for incremental pricing premium, right? Yeah.
I mean, that makes it an easy sort of no-brainer.
Yes.
If you were telling me that an ROI on a typical business window for a building could be 5 years.
Yep.
On a 40-year window. So, you know, that's pretty simple.
It's pretty simple
math.
It's pretty simple.
So, and more comfortable.
Yes.
So, and you also mentioned something about, okay, some other weird things that people might not know. You just told me. Talk about bird strikes. I was just like, what? That is cool.
Yeah. No. So it's funny because my professional background is in finance. It hides the fact that I'm a full blown nerd. I was a biology and chemistry major, and then have a graduate degree in biophysics. So I love this material science stuff. Absolutely love it. And I've become a total nerd about it. My wife mocks me because I cannot walk into a room without looking at the windows. And I don't mean like casually glancing at them. I mean like looking at them. Yeah, and she's like, please stop. Okay. So I also like nerding out about this stuff, bird glass. So, in North America, there are several billion bird deaths each year due to birds that can't see the window and fly into it because they think they can fly through it, right? And so one of the growing trends in the glass and glazing industry, because this is becoming such a problem, far more widespread than people realized, is for architects to spec bird glass. And bird glass is glass that has a UV pattern on it that is imperceptible to the human eye, but is like a glaring caution sign for birds as they fly through the air. And so there are various forms of this and different patterns, and some of them are visible to humans, some of them are invisible to humans. And increasingly, different jurisdictions are mandating them in building code.
Huh.
Yep.
That's interesting. So you can build that, obviously.
We can build that.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
All right. There's some other really interesting use cases that we were talking about. Talk about the Empire State Building and the math.
Sure.
That went into that.
Sure. So one of Alpin's kind of pride points, and if you walk into our offices, it's hard to mistake because we have pictures of the Empire State Building everywhere. But one of our earlier big wins was we replaced all of the glass in every single window in the Empire State Building, from the ground floor Starbucks all the way to the, you know, observatory that King Kong was like hanging off of in the movie, right? And you can imagine a lot of different glass specs throughout that building, and some of the stuff in the observatory has to be built to withstand ultra wind and ultra clear visibility for, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the reason why the Empire State Building went down this adventure of replacing all the glass in their building was because their chiller broke. Right. It wasn't the windows. It was the fact that their chiller broke. And so when you are looking at heating and cooling your building, chillers and boilers, their capacity is generally measured in tonnage, right? And if you have to heat or cool what is functionally a screen door that's allowing air to flow in and out of it, or a single can, you know, single wall tin can kind of thing, you're going to have a really beefy chiller and boiler. But if you can make your building more resemble a Yeti cooler, it doesn't take nearly as much tonnage in your chiller or boiler to make it work. So what sparked this entire thing is that the Empire State Building needed a new chiller. They didn't want to go with the deluxe ultra model that was going to cost tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. And they figured out that they could size down the chiller if they addressed the envelope of their building.
Wow.
And we helped them do.
So it ultimately cost them less money to replace their windows than to buy beefier air conditioning systems.
You got it.
Wow. Yep. That's pretty cool math, actually.
Very cool math.
Did you know that kind of math existed where companies were going to make decisions based on infrastructure investment?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was that new to you, or is that like,
it was,
this
not
is cool.
new to me. So in my old company, it was called Greenworks Lending. We sold it to Nuveen, and the whole thesis of the company was that people would actually address all of these deferred maintenance and energy inefficiencies in their buildings if you could make it pay for itself, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And one of the lessons that we learned while growing that business was that never, ever would a commercial building owner undergo an optional energy efficiency retrofit project. 0% of the time, 0%, right? And so instead, what we needed to do was we needed to look for what are the triggers that are making these business owners actually go through the pain and the cost of retrofitting their building. Well,
money.
It was the things that you uh-huh. would expect. Their roof was leaking.
Uh-huh.
Which was the number one reason that they would install solar panels, because they had to replace their sure, roof. And so sure. might as well slap some solar panels to it. Their chiller or boiler broke. So they would finally address a new high efficiency model when they were replacing it. And you could usually convince them to address their lighting or building controls at the same time. A major tenant was moving out because they were uncomfortable. And yeah. then you could finally get them to address their windows.
Interesting. So it sounds like windows are sort of an underappreciated financial lever for buildings.
They are, yes. And it's because historically people have thought of replacing their windows as about as attractive as getting a lobotomy. Because picture your average commercial building, you're putting 1,000 penetrations into your building, you're kicking out your tenants for a couple of years. All sorts of risk of air or water infiltration. It's a disaster, right? And so people do not look forward to it.
Yeah.
They try to avoid it. And that mm-hmm. is why about 50% of the commercial buildings across this country still have either single glazed windows or first generation, very low performing double glazed windows.
Yeah.
50%.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a huge percentage when people understand that living in that building is less comfortable and it wastes money.
And it costs money. Yeah.
And that just speaks to the pain of going through a window replacement project.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. That, you know, it's not just the cost, but the pain associated with moving tenants and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right.
Yeah. And that really gave birth to our WindCert product, right? And so that is the product that I was talking you through, where you don't need to replace your windows. You can actually just press in this secondary glazing system, and without having to rip out the existing conditions, you can transform that old window system into a high performing R6 window system.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
And the idea that you could invest in inserts that are that look like they belong there.
Yep.
But you don't have to displace any tenants. You don't have to do any of that stuff. That's super cool. Let's take a quick break.
Sure.
You're listening to ProCode 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast since 2021. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Andrew Zeck, CEO of Alpen High Performance Product. Hey, I want to thank our sponsors, Via Technologies. Really love these guys. They host the ProCode 360 website, and they give me all kinds of tech support around managing it. They also, by the way, attract really, really smart clients who want help with their web presence, but also with their digital marketing and such. And Via Technology has managed to match themselves with super smart clients and do some really collaborative work around digital media and advertising. Also, Denver Ventures, you may know them as Denver Angels in the past. We partner with them to feature great Colorado companies. Some really great ones have been episodes of ProCo 360 in the past. And you'll see the Denver Ventures logo on many past episodes. So moving forward, I love what you're doing. And there are some other intriguing little things that we talked about as we're walking around. Talk about the impact of altitude on these encased sealed windows.
Sure. Yeah. So we manufacture at roughly 5,500 feet, just south of Boulder in Lewisville. And obviously the air here is a little bit thinner than it is in other parts of our country. And we ship windows to all 50 states and Canada. And we ship windows to sea level. We ship windows to Leadville, right? And so we need to adjust for different altitudes for all of our windows.
Because they're all pressurized.
They're all pressurized, yeah. So one of the most important things that we do is we hermetically seal these insulated glass units so that no gas can escape or no water can get in for 40 years, right? And so obviously you got to get the pressure right on the inside. And so we have specialized equipment that basically either sucks gas out or pumps gas in, depending on where you're going, to calibrate to the final altitude and average temperature of your destination.
That average temperature as well?
Yep. Average temperature as well. Yep.
That's cool. Yep. All right. So what are some other innovations around glass that, like, first of all, I never thought it was an interesting subject, but it has become one to me.
It is fascinating, yes. Dave.
So what are some other things that maybe normal people, lay people that aren't in the business don't think about as factors that are interesting?
Yeah. So one thing that we talked about briefly on our tour was something called thermal bridging. And thermal bridging is a concept where, you know, basically if you have a piece of metal or some other highly conductive material that is connecting the outside of your house to the inside of your house, it's going to take whatever the temperature is on the outside of your house and it's going to transmit it straight into the interior of your house, right? So if it's a 100-degree day outside, you got a little radiator. If it's a 0-degree day outside, you got a little icicle poking into your house. And obviously you don't want that. So when you're making high performance building materials, one of the things that you search for all the time is to eliminate thermal bridges of any kind, right? And so that kind of leads to those insulating frame materials that we were discussing. Another one that I think is fascinating is just the stat that in your average home or building, there are enough little microscopic air leaks, sometimes not even microscopic, but there are enough air leaks between inside and outside that it's the equivalent of leaving your front door just wide open.
Yeah, that's wild.
And so the lengths that we go to do air sealing are out of this world, right? And then a third that listeners might be interested in is just, again, the material science involved with glass. So most people just look through the glass, right? And the whole point is that it's supposed to be beautiful and sparkly and clear and connect you with the outside environment, and all of that is true. But most glass these days is not just clear glass. Most glass has a set of coatings on it that are deposited in a vacuum chamber that selectively let visible light in. And then they're composed of just atoms thick coatings of silver and other materials that don't let ultraviolet light or infrared light in or out as easily. So it's spectrally selective. So basically let the visible light in and don't let the other stuff in or
that's
out.
That's cool. So the idea that, you know, I could stand by my window and not get a sunburn.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. But there are all kinds of specialized treatments.
You got it. And depending on, even in the same house, you might want to have different treatments on the north and the east side and others on the south or the west side, because if you're getting afternoon or evening sun, you're going to bake yourself versus if you're getting morning
and
sun.
And you can do that.
And you can do that.
That's cool.
Yeah, we call it directionally tuning your windows. Wow. So,
all right. Talk about manufacturing in Colorado. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could be in other countries probably and save money, right? But I mean, talk about
could,
this.
You could. Yeah. But to what end, right? I mean, first of all, not to get too mushy about it, but like we have a commitment to our communities here, right? And so it is a huge piece of who Alpen is that we're trying to build this thing here, right? And that's because of the jobs that we create and the community that we strengthen and the ecosystem of partners and installers and suppliers, et cetera, that we depend on and that we feed, right? So all of that is super important to us. There are also a lot of advantages of working here. So we're surrounded by just a crazy amount of the building efficiency technology and innovation in this country. So
like what?
The National Renewable Energy Laboratory. Yeah. I forget its new name. I'm supposed to call it the new name, but I can't remember what it is. It's right down the road. Rocky Mountain Institute, right down the road. Colorado School of Mines, right down the road. And so there's a lot of, it's kind of bred this like little mini ecosystem of building technology experts that we certainly benefit from and
that's
get
cool.
a lot of talent from and a lot of like just brain assist from our colleagues. So that's really neat. And then, you know, I'm just, maybe I'm Pollyannish, but I believe American manufacturing can win just overall, right? Like our consumers are here and our materials can be brought here pretty cheaply. Mm-hmm. And we have the talent here that might cost a little bit more per hour, and that's okay. That when assisted by the right software and the right automation technology, we can have them working at the top of their licenses, and we can get our costs and our precision and throughput on par with the best manufacturers in the world.
Cool. Yeah, we were talking as we were walking that, you know, you are automating more, but the amount of jobs isn't going to go down. The throughput is going up.
Yep.
And so ultimately, to compete globally, you have to be able to apply human talent when it's needed and automate when that's called for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at my old company, we used to make a joke about it. As we grew, things that were, you know, your whole job before become part of your job, right? And you are required to scale the impact that you as a human being have on the company that you work at, right? And the euphemism that we used for it internally is, as you get older, you got to give up your Legos if you want to get the PlayStation, right?
So
at a certain point, you got to give up those Legos. And it's the same concept here, right? Like we have a lot of incredibly skilled technicians on the floor who have come up through the ranks at Alpen, and we're super proud of them. And do they want to lift the same piece of material over and over and over and over again all day, every day? No. Like mm-hmm. we want to use them to do the actual like craftsman pieces of the process and to use their brain on how do we mitigate risk in our windows and how do we engineer smarter on a go forward basis. So we're continuing to, I think, scale both their throughput and their training and their marketability.
That's cool. Now you made a little nod to how the name of NREL has changed, but I mean, politics has played a role in renewable, in this case, it's not renewable energy. It's saving energy and becoming energy efficient. But regardless of what politics are involved, I mean, these are real dollars, right? So do politics really determine the outcome of Alpen?
No, I think so. The macro tailwinds that we think that we're riding as a business are the fact that people are increasingly aware of what goes into the buildings that they occupy. They are increasingly paying more for energy, right? And so if we help them use less of it, that's a win. But then probably more than anything else, as material science in buildings advances, people realize that they've been forced to live in this like world of bad trade-offs where you either get a window or you get a comfortable house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we teach them that we can give you a window and a cathedral of glass that insulates as well as a wall, they want it.
Yeah.
And by the way, there is nothing about politics in that statement whatsoever, yeah, right?
I mean, for sure. And the same is true with like a commercial building.
If
you can spend X amount, 20% more and have a 5-year payback and have more comfortable tenants and all these kinds of things.
Every architect worth their salt wants to create this palace of glass that gives you great connection with the outdoor environment. It's been proven to be more healthy. It's, you know, everything, yeah, right? Yeah, everyone wants it. And they just have been trained that they can't have it because it's too expensive to heat and cool. You're going to bake your tenants when it's inside. It's too expensive overall, like blah, blah, blah. And I think what we are, we're myth busting, right? Like we're going out and teaching people that that trade-off doesn't need to exist.
Your growth proves that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not having trouble. Well, maybe you are, but it doesn't seem like you're having trouble selling and growing.
No, that is the least of our problems. No, yeah. I tell my investors and board this all the time. Like, listen, guys, we got the products and we have plenty of demand for them. So we're scaling quickly and we're just trying to ride the wave and not fall down while we surf.
Yeah. So. I mean, you must have copycats and others that are trying to, you know, follow you. But I mean, ultimately, you know, saving 10% on this product to get something that isn't wonderful, people don't win that way, right?
No, we don't think so, right? So there is, you know, people say, okay, what kind of a moat is there around your company, right? And how differentiated. What we're doing today is pretty darn differentiated. And it's not that other people couldn't do it. In fact, we would welcome it if other people did it because I think rising tides lift all boats. And I think the more people get advanced windows, the more that they're going to realize, wow, I really want these advanced windows.
So demand would grow much faster than you could possibly scale.
For sure. Yeah. And our market penetration is like, you know, a fraction of 1% of all windows sold across the country, right? And so
you don't brag about that to your investors, do you?
No, I do. No, it's great. I mean, if you're growing that fast and your market penetration is still that low, it's because the market is huge.
Yeah.
And it's growing every day, again, as awareness grows. And these macro forces push people to want better building materials.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't scare me.
Anything scare you?
Everything scares me. Are you kidding,
except
Dave?
For that, except for demand. What a great job for a CEO to be scared by everything but demand.
No, I mean, listen, one of the new pieces of this role to me is that in the past, my products, in air quotes, have been lending products, dollars, right? Software, consulting engagements. Those don't have complex supply chains that reach overseas. They don't involve complex manufacturing machinery. This is a very physical game, and the physical game takes capital. It takes planning. It takes super careful engineering. It is harder. But it's also... all of that is very satisfying.
Yeah.
You can feel and see and touch the impact that you're having.
Is the difficulty essentially the moat?
No, I think that the difficulty is scaling in a smart way. I was sitting at a conference at dinner, you know, one of our vendors took us out to a wonderful steak dinner, and I was sitting and kind of talking with some of the other executives there, and a longtime sort of crusty window executive who's had a great run. He was asking me about our growth because folks in the industry are noticing, and he was like, oh man, that sounds harrowing to me. If I could do it the perfect way, yeah, I would grow my business 15% each year. No more, no less, just 15% each year.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I signed up for the roller coaster version, so here we go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so far, it's all been up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, underneath the sound bites are always brilliant. And then underneath the surface, there's all sorts of daily, weekly turmoil that goes on.
What do you wish you had known when you took over in this operating role that you now know?
So we're in the process of automating a lot of our manufacturing process today. And man, I wish I had some do-overs on just the way that we do it.
Really?
Right?
Why?
We would still do the automation is 100% the right way to go, right? No question. But I probably, there were some product design upgrades that we probably should have done prior to automating some different points. I had underestimated how nice it was to have really good, strong North American service divisions of the companies that you're buying your machinery from. You know, things like that. Nothing crazy, but definitely some hard-earned battle scars along the way.
Yeah, so. So as you look at the next several years, I mean, it's growth, growth, growth. So what do you, like, what does that look like? Do you have to move to a different building? You have to hire a bunch more people? I know you're going to automate some things.
Yeah, it's a lot of the work that we're doing right now is we're trying to build the right infrastructure around our manufacturing team to help that manufacturing team be successful, right?
Because you've got everything, every single window is custom made.
Correct.
That, I mean, is impressive, and yet it seems like there's a big opportunity to create some sort of standardized something.
Yes, yes. Well, and every window is custom made, but it's made from, I use this analogy with the team a lot, right? Like, we have a cookbook that has nearly unlimited recipes in it, but there are only 100 ingredients that you're making all those recipes from, right? So when you say every single window is custom, it's a little bit of a misnomer. The sizes are custom.
Yeah.
The fit and finish is custom, but it's made out of a standard set of ingredients, right? And so a lot of this is making sure, but that does play into the infrastructure around making my manufacturing team successful. That needs to be governed by data systems, right? That and a really well-installed ERP that communicates with your manufacturing machinery, communicates with your procurement division, your scheduling division, so that we're a symphony, not a cacophony, right?
And
everybody can be planning around the right set of projects at the right time.
So last question for you is, I've been starting to read about Alpen, which is how we finally connected. But,
yeah.
You know, I've been in Colorado for a long time and business community, like a long time, had never heard about Alpen. So is that a good thing? Do you like to stay below the radar in Colorado? Do you want to have a, you know, be recognized now?
I think that you are, what you're seeing is actually a shift in our strategy a bit, right? So I think for a lot of years, Alpen was a smaller manufacturing company. A lot of the work that we did was bespoke, and we were sort of a darling of the DOE and a darling of the National Lab System. We were the first to raise our hands when there was a new
kind
innovation.
Of a novelty, in a way.
Novelty is a little
is that too
of a negative.
Now?
It might be a negative term, right. But we were an innovator, right?
Yes.
And then what I have I talked with our team around is, rather than the innovator who appeals to the top 1%, the bleeding edge technologist who wants the best window in their house, we need to be a pragmatic innovator who has the bleeding edge products that have been perfected and engineered to a high degree of replicability. And we have pounded down on the cost curve to the point where we can appeal to the top 10 or top 25%, that kind of early majority
sure.
type audience, instead of the bleeding edge innovator all the
like
time.
Like the Apple of the 80s.
There you go. And what we're, of course, along with that comes the need for a larger sales presence, a bigger kind of, I don't think we're making any huge splashes out there in the media world, but a little bit of a larger presence in the ecosystem.
Cool.
Right.
Well, listeners, watch for more from Alpen. I'm going to wrap us up there.
Great. Fantastic.
I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Andrew Zech, CEO of Alpen High Performance Products. And Andrew, it has been fun.
It's been a lot of fun.
See
Thanks
this
for
place.
Coming.
To talk about it. It's super cool. I keep picturing the products in my head, the multiple layers sealed. Anyway, it's very impressive. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors, Denver Ventures and Via Technologies. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.